Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. A very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Brilliant to be with you once again. Don't forget Tech Talk. It's our chance each week to gather around and explore the world of technology from a blindness or low vision perspective. We're always keen to hear from you. Drop us a note, it can be a voice note or a written note, to techtalk@rnib.org.uk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Hubert Pavalkovich speaks with YouTuber and accessibility advocate Carry On Accessibility. We'll hear all about RNIB's next inclusive design conference, plus a roundup of some of the best accessible games that you can play in the palm of your hand. Joining us are co-hosts Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown and Hubert Pavalkovich. Welcome in to you all. Good to be together once again. Callum, how you doing? What's grabbing your attention from the world of technology this time?
Well, I've done it. I've finally done it. I've given in to the peer pressure. I've got myself a pair of Meta Ray-Bans this week.
Oh, Callum Stoneman. Well, is this an early Christmas present to yourself?
Well, no, to be fair, I say I got them. My wife got them for me. Because we were talking about pictures and I was saying to her, these are, you know, because she knows, she doesn't really follow this kind of world. You know, she's not as much of a tech geek as me, but she knows we've been talking about them and we got on to talking about pictures and I was saying these are a really good, I can imagine these being a really good way of being able to take pictures, you know, because you don't have to get the phone out and mess about with it, you just have to look in the right direction basically.
And how's it going? That's what we want to know.
Good, yeah, amazing. I set them up, which was all really nice, really accessible, did the whole VPN connection thing in the app to get the Meta AI functionality, the worst kept secret ever. And that's all working nice. But to be honest, the whole thing of taking pictures and videos, it's been the selling point for me. The AI is pretty good. You know, I like it, but it's, for me, it's that. I mean, we took, the day after we got them, we took our son to Chester Zoo and being able to go around there and me taking photos, taking videos of him looking at all the animals, and you know, they had a Christmas light show thing on, so we were going around that and I was able to, you know, get photos and video. And I think I need to get used to, there's a difference, I think, because I've had no sight, I need to kind of get used to this. There's a difference between your head facing in the right direction and actually looking in the right direction, if that makes sense, which I think I need to get used to. But I mean, apparently they turned out pretty good. I gave them to Jess and I just said, right, just keep the good ones. And she kept about 70-odd photos.
Wow.
So, I mean, I think that's a win.
Goodness me.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Obviously, that's from a whole day of walking around and it's just so simple, you know, so convenient. Because by the time you've got the phone out, listen to voiceover, listen to the description of what's in the frame and stuff, the moment's gone. You know, it's too much messing about for me. I know people do it, but this has been, yeah, I'm really loving these. And the audio quality when you do videos is unbelievable as well.
Spontaneity, that's what it's all about. And have you tried any of the remote video assistance services like Be My Eyes on there?
I haven't yet. No, I've connected Be My Eyes and that was all fine. It was just such an easy sale process, but no, I've not actually tried it yet. I've only had them for a few days. So, but what I have tried is video calling via WhatsApp. I just video called a couple of friends while we were going around, and that works beautifully. So you just say to the Meta assistant, call whoever on WhatsApp. That makes a call, and then once you're on the call, you just double tap the little capture button on the glasses, and that turns it into a video call. And yeah, it's just really nice, really simple.
Yeah, keeps your hands free for your dog or your cane or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, smashing. Oh, well, great stuff, Callum. Glad you're enjoying them. Let us know how you get on, if you discover anything new, if you've got any tips or tricks to share with all of us. Jackie, what's going on in your technology world this time?
Okay, well, just to respond to Callum, I did try ringing the Be My Eyes volunteer service at the weekend because I got a box of Christmas cards and I want to put labels in them. But I could not tell. There were no discerning features on the cards to tell me which way up they were. So I called Be My Eyes and I had a really lovely lady who she went through the whole box with me, told me the pictures and told me which way up they all were. So it was good that I could put my then labels inside them. So that really does work. But the other thing I have done this week, shock horror, I have updated the Sonos app.
You were like you were holding out. I think you were the last person, Jackie
Yeah, I
Brown,
think
to
we're.
update that
I
app.
probably was. Yeah, I thought, right, I'm gonna do this because I'm fed up having to keep updating my apps individually to avoid it. And I thought, right, that this is it. Surely there must come a point when I'm gonna have to do this. So I did. And actually it's pretty good. It's not as bad as I thought it
It's
was.
different.
It's different.
That's praise indeed, Jackie Brown. That's praise
Yeah, it's
indeed.
not bad. I have to say, if anybody wants to do it, I mean, it depends what you're using the app for. For me, what I like using it for is to pair speakers in different rooms when, maybe I'm got the TV on and I want to hear it in the kitchen. So I've got a Move in the kitchen, a Sonos Move, and I can then just go into the app and pair that with the TV that's on in the living room, and that's really handy. But anything to do with music, well, I just tend to use my smart speakers or whatever anyway, so that wouldn't have been too much a problem. But it was just all the pairing and everything. I thought, I wonder how this is going to go, but it's actually really, it's great, it's fine.
Blimey, have you heard that, chaps?
Yeah, I give the thumbs up, my seal of
Yeah,
approval.
we could have done without all the drama though, couldn't we? We could have done
Oh,
without
yeah,
all
we
that,
could.
you know. If they just sort of tested it for a little
Yeah.
bit longer, we could have perhaps avoided some of this. So, well, good
Yeah.
news. There you are. So Jackie Brown reckons the Sonos app, if you have Sonos speakers, the Move, Jackie, I think it might be worth mentioning. That's one of the battery powered ones. It's
It
quite
is.
sort of luggable, isn't it? You
It
can
is.
drag
Yeah.
that around from room to room. It's not. I take mine into the garage, you know, and I have it blasting out while I'm pounding on the treadmill if I can't find a guide runner. So yeah, the Sonos Move works quite well for that.
Yeah.
All right, Hubert, what have you got?
A little accessibility feature rolling out on WhatsApp, which I know iMessage has introduced in iOS 17. Voice messages will soon be transcribed. How reliably is remains to be seen, but that is a little accessibility feature currently rolling out globally across Android and iOS.
Ah.
Ah, very nice.
Do you use those transcripts, anybody?
No.
I had voicemail transcribed before, which I found actually on iOS really reliable with the new voicemail transcription feature. I thought it was actually really quite good.
Yeah, they are not bad, those voicemail transcriptions. They're fairly accurate. Obviously, it depends on the call quality, especially with voicemails. But they are pretty good. You at least get the gist of what they're saying. I just wish that Apple would, because the voicemail translation or transcription, I should say, and the podcast transcripts that you can get on the Apple Podcasts app as well, they're both fairly accurate. I haven't really tried voice messaging on iMessage, but I just wish they would take whatever technology they're using there and move it to the dictation, so that could actually become useful.
And then, of course, if you have a hearing impairment, then actually a transcript could be a really important accessibility feature if you find listening to the original audio difficult. I sometimes have this when I'm out and about and people send me voice messages on WhatsApp and I can't really hear them. And I don't have a hearing impairment, but if you're in a really noisy environment, actually having a transcript means you could use Braille or something else. Well, there we are. Excellent stuff. Well, welcome in all. Good to have you here. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Now on Tech Talk, it's time to talk not only about the difference technology can make to people's lives, but also how to spread that knowledge and help people use technology to their full advantage if they have a visual impairment. Joining me now is Carrie Morales from Carry On Accessibility, who some listeners may have heard of. But if you haven't, we will find out more about Carry On Accessibility. Carrie, thank you for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
So let's start with what Carry On Accessibility is. What is it and how did it come about?
Carry On Accessibility is my social media. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, or X, Facebook, TikTok. But my main content is found on YouTube. And I share a lot of technology and accessibility related content. I used to work at a low vision center, and I love talking to customers and patients, helping them find the right technology and the right products that they need. And when I decided to stay home with my son and be a stay-home mom, I wanted to still continue that work. And so I started YouTube. Actually, Carry On Accessibility is my second channel. My first one was actually called Live Accessible.
And what sort of other services does Carry On Accessibility offer? Do you only focus on content creation, or do you also help with explaining how to make various apps or websites accessible?
I would say the majority is content creation, creating videos about accessibility and technology, different devices and products. Now, I do also offer consultation for, let's say, developers or companies that are looking for a subject matter expert or somebody who is seeking to make their app or their website accessible. That's actually my day job. I work with a company called Fable, but that has nothing to do with my work at Carry On Accessibility or COA.
What are some of your favorite technologies that you demonstrated on your YouTube channel?
I would have to say the Meta glasses has to be one of my favorites. And that was received very well. Everybody was very interested in that. I also really enjoyed testing the Apple Vision Pro, even though it didn't work for me. I still really enjoyed that experience. One other one I would say that I really enjoyed was the HumanWare Stellar Trek. That one was really interesting because I actually don't travel a lot. I usually go out with friends or family and not really typically by myself, but it was really interesting experience to actually have something that I felt was slightly better than a phone in a lot of ways and go around like different places with it. It was really a fun experience.
Yes, the Meta glasses are very much often mentioned here on Tech Talk and the promise they have. You know, what particularly has stood out to you when you were looking at the Meta glasses?
Number one, it's hands-free, which, you know, we always have devices, whether it's our phone, we're holding it up, we don't know which way to point it at. That's always tricky. And I just love the hands-free, and you don't even need to press a button or go through a menu or anything of that sort. You just wake it up and you ask whatever question you have, and you just like look in the general direction of whatever it is you're wanting more information about, which is different than, you know, say seeing AI or other things, or maybe the Envision glasses where you have to choose a mode, whether that's text or light or color or document, things like that. That's the difference here with the Metas. You don't have to do that. You skip over that and you can just tell it what you want.
And when it comes to specialist technology, which, you know, we often also talk about here on Tech Talk as well as mainstream devices, what has particularly stood out for you in, well, the Stellar Trek that you've mentioned?
I guess in some ways, even though it's specialist tech and it's quite on the expensive side, my experience has been that they don't always do a great job, whether it's with navigation or whatever it is, really, for book players, things like that. I really didn't have many issues with the Stellar Trek, except for dictation. But the experience of having buttons while navigating instead of trying to hold my phone like close to my face or trying to juggle my cane and a bunch of other things like this. It was really nice to just have it and be able to quickly locate like a button to press if I want to know the next turn or something like that. And another thing that really stood out to me was the OCR. Often, I use either Google Lookout or Seeing AI. The Stellar Trek is a little different, whereas it doesn't automatically do the OCR. And I would think that in some ways that would be easier if you're looking for something in particular. But when I'm out and I want to read something that I know is there, having to hit a button in order to do the OCR and having it really quickly respond, that was actually easier for me than like having my phone out, because sometimes it could just keep talking, and I'm like, no, not that one, the other thing, and I have to sit there and wait for it to recognize that, the scene has slightly changed, or it'll read every single thing. So for me, it was really how responsive it was that actually surprised me. I guess my expectation maybe isn't the highest when it comes to specialized tech, though.
Let's get onto a tech wish list, shall we? If there's a piece of technology you would love to be able to feature on your channel, maybe in the future, what would it be?
I'm really excited about the Echo Visions. They're, I think, very close to the Meta glasses. Except that they're supposed to be more accessibility oriented. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. There are some limitations with the Meta glasses. It can be really frustrating to hear certain things like, oh, we can't describe people. Sometimes documents can be a hit or miss. Products and things like that can. The Metas don't like to. The Metas don't always work with products and things like that. So I'm really excited about the Echo Visions, and hopefully they'll be on the channel in the next year if it comes out.
Now, a lot of the content you make makes a lot of difference to people. It's always nice to be able to, hear other people using technology, and then you can find out for yourself what it kind of does. What have you got any highlights of feedback you've had from your viewers where your content has particularly made a massive difference to someone?
I can't think of a specific comment off the top of my head right now, but often if I go over whether it's an app or I remember doing a video on the Kindle, and talking about the accessibility it has or doesn't have, I remember talking about other products and really walking through them, let's say even the Sense Player, people talking about how there are maybe a lot of videos on something like the Kindle or an Android phone or whatever phone or device, but not a lot of people talk about the accessibility, especially when it comes to mainstream technology. And a lot of people don't explore it, I think, as much as I do or try to at least. So they really appreciate that. From what I've seen in the comments. Also, there are different like tips and tricks, like especially for Android, that maybe it's always exciting for me when I hear that somebody didn't know and that they wish they knew before. Well, I mean, I wish they knew before too, but it's great that now they know and that I could share that.
Now let's talk about future plans. Carry on accessibility going strong, but what sort of plans have you got for the future for the company?
Now that would be telling, wouldn't it? I think I want to continue making content. That's really my passion. But I do want to find a way to make more of a difference and possibly improve on experiences that especially people that are visually impaired have. I will share that sometimes I feel like there are strides in accessibility, especially when it comes to using a screen reader. And as somebody who uses both a screen reader and screen magnification. I am very, very happy and very pleased and delighted that there are all these improvements. But I also see that there isn't much development going on in the low vision space, or at least not innovation. So maybe in the future I could help improve that. We'll have to see.
And finally, if people would like to find out more about Carry On Accessibility or indeed contact you and maybe get a consultation or just talk to you in general and submit feedback about your content, how can they do that?
Sure. Well, if you want to find Carry On Accessibility, you can find that on YouTube or even just Google. You can go to connect.carryonaccessibility.com or just carryonaccessibility.com. It can be a little easier when you go to the connect.carryonaccessibility.com. There's also a form there if you'd like to contact me, or you can even just shoot me a message. The email is actually email at carryonaccessibility.com.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to hearing about more of your content and the great work you do. Thank you so much for the work you are doing also, and for coming on to tell us about Carry On Accessibility here on Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hubert Pavarkovich there speaking with YouTuber Carry On Accessibility. And I do like Carrie's work, but I'm keen to hear from Hubert and Jackie and Callum. Are you YouTubers? Do you get involved in YouTube? Is it a place that you go for information?
Sometimes I'll go for, if I'm looking at something very specific, or I need to get some information that I know is out there, but I tend not to use it because the adverts drive me nuts.
You don't want to pay for it.
No,
No.
not really.
Because you can get rid of the adverts. It's a massively popular platform, though, isn't it? YouTube. I mean, everything's on YouTube. You can find out anything, learn anything. Why don't we lean into it more as a resource, do you think?
I think just the accessibility sometimes, just the because I find, because yeah, you could pay for it and get rid of the ads, but again, it's another subscription. There's there's too many subscriptions nowadays. And also, I mean, I don't, the ads during the videos don't bother me too much. Most of the time, they're only like 5 or 6 seconds, and if they're longer, you can usually skip them. What bugs me is the ads that appear now in the middle of your search results. So you'll have like two or three. This is on iOS. I haven't really used it much on Windows, but you'd have like two or three search results, and then maybe two or three ads, and sometimes they're dynamic, so they're kind of changing, I think, as you're scrolling through, so you kind of get stuck there, and it's amazing that we've got channels like Carrie's channel and others. And this is not, to be clear, this is not the content creator's fault in the slightest, but I think the real benefit, obviously for us, but also in having those channels, is how easily accessible they are to sighted people, I think, because I think sighted people use YouTube probably more than us. And if they can just type in something about blindness or visual impairment and find these channels, it just raises more awareness of what we can do and how we work, doesn't it?
So it's important to be there. I guess you're all trying with YouTube and your phone on an app.
Yeah, the official YouTube app is what I use, yeah.
I mean, there probably are third-party YouTube apps, I expect.
Yeah, I think they are. And I haven't really tried them much, to be honest. I think I'm just quite happy with, I get a lot of my content from either social media or from podcasts, to be honest.
So, look, let us know if you use YouTube, if you've got channels that you recommend, people that you follow, or do you like YouTube? Do you find it frustrating? Are you a YouTube subscriber? Share your YouTube pros and cons. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum, Jackie, Hubert, thanks a lot.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
A very warm welcome back to RNIB's Accessible Gaming Officer, Sightless Combat. It's good to have you back with us.
Likewise, good to be back with you. Hello, everybody. And very excited to have a discussion as we draw to the end of this year and begin to look forward to next year as well in terms of accessible games and things. Always good to chat about this every so often and see how the landscape is shifting, evolving, and trying to move forward where it can.
And when we talk to you about gaming, it's often about big AAA titles on consoles, but there's a wealth of accessible games now available in the palm of your hand. We're talking today about iOS games, so those are available on your iPhone. Tell us about the first game you've got to share with us.
Yeah, I've got a few to share with you today, but first, why not start with Land of Livia? An idle RPG is how I would describe it. Essentially, you go into the game as a fantasy setting, sort of swords and various supernatural elements going on as well at times. And you essentially go from, pressing buttons in game and then you leave it alone. So unlike most games where you would have to keep the app open and you would, constantly be doing things in there to progress, with Land of Livia, you essentially go in, tell it what to do, leave it alone for a while, and it will have durations of time. So it will say, oh, this quest will take 25 minutes to complete. So you press, attempt quest or whatever it says, and then you will leave it alone, close the app. It will then give you a notification and say, your quest is done. So then you go back in and you're like, have I succeeded? Have I failed? Oh, no, I failed. And then you'll have to, look around, try and up your stats to then, improve your chances of doing well at the quest. So it's a very interesting game to sort of occasionally go into, pass the time with, and sometimes things can take a massive chunk of time, which is great because then you don't have to be constantly glued to it. You can just set it up, leave it alone, open the app later, come back to it, see how things are going.
As you say, maybe it's more of a passive experience. Who would that be aimed at then? Maybe somebody who's not spending so much time actually sort of actively playing games.
I mean, yes, it's aimed at that. It's aimed at the sort of lore fanatics. Well, there are lore mini games. I haven't played those yet. They do exist. But it's also aimed at just anybody, really, because, whether you are a person who enjoys a lot of action in their games or whether you're somebody who just wants to kind of have it be fire and forget until it tells you otherwise, you have the option there. And, you could even play multiple games at once. So you could have this going on, doing a quest for, several minutes at a time whilst you're, doing something else on your phone. So that there's ways to make that work for you, depending on how you want to play.
And is this the sort of game that has an end point? Or is it something that you can keep on playing as long as you're interested in it, really?
Well, the game devs have kept expanding it as it's been going. I personally haven't reached any kind of end point. So I myself got stuck at a stat check. So essentially, I wanted to have 100% chance of completing a particular quest and needed to do a lot of work in game to make that happen, which I haven't gone back and done. But that's the good thing about this game. You can leave it alone for a while and then come back to it when you want to. But I'm not aware of an endpoint. There are specific, chapters and things. I believe, the first one is free and then you can kind of go on from there. You have, lots and lots of things to do, lots of areas to go to and to, see for yourself how this all plays out.
And accessibility-wise, what was the experience like for you?
Yeah, it's a lot of reading, as with a lot of these games. It's all voiceover compatible. It seemed straightforward. The tutorial was quite good. They are kind of overhauling things and updating things. So, they're always open to feedback as well, I'm sure. So, going ahead and having a look at it yourself wouldn't be a bad idea. I personally didn't really struggle with it when I was playing around with it a while ago. So, no, it's a good game, an interesting concept, and, one that's being looked at in other titles. There are other idle RPG or idle game type experiences being looked at, though the one I was thinking of off the top of my head has yet to release. But it's a cool genre that has a lot of potential if done right. And I think Land of Livia is a good start to that, at the very least.
Well, let's move on. What's the next iOS game you've got in mind for us?
So this is a little game called Bard Card. It was relatively inexpensive when I saw it launch relatively recently. This is a dungeon crawling narrative with cards as mechanics, or items as mechanics as well. It sounds rather unusual and rather vague, but that's partly because I don't want to spoil, elements of the story. I've not gone too deeply into this, but it is a very interesting game, and it leaves you with lots of odd mysteries to then figure out later. As much as it might seem like a sort of fantasy world with enemies like goblins and things, the fact of the matter is, it seems from what I've gone through of the game so far, that it is going to get a lot stranger than that later on. So, it's a very unusual game. Once again, voiceover compatible and reads most things. The only thing it doesn't read is the battle text, but lots of people have fed back on that, and hopefully the developer is going to look into resolving that. So it's slightly less than fully accessible. Well, it's fully accessible, but the fact of the matter is that there are still a few small things that would need to be improved for quality of life.
And are games like these suitable for casual gamers, people who may not have a lot of time to dedicate to playing?
I would say they're suitable for most people. You can dive in, you know, you can leave a run partway through, because this is a sort of roguelike or roguelite, depending on, you know, what definition you ascribe to. You know, you can leave a run halfway through, come back in, try and figure out where you were, carry on from there. Or equally, you could just do a run until you die and then have to restart all over again with, you know, potentially new things unlocked or new knowledge acquired, that kind of thing. So, yeah, if you're a casual gamer, you could probably get a lot out of this. But equally, if you're willing to invest a lot of time into a game, it could also be a good one for you as well.
And you've also got some choose your own adventure games to recommend to us as well.
So this is through a company called Choice of Games. They've been around for a very, very long time on iOS and on various other platforms as well. Their games are available on web as well, for instance, and via the PC gaming platform Steam, which is a very cool way to play those games if you want a way to read the content of those games in, you know, with your screen reader of choice on desktops and things. So Choice of Games are choose your own adventure games in text format, and you've got pretty much every setting under the sun that you could imagine is covered there, and it's very, very good to see. There's for instance, there's a wrestling themed one which I very much enjoyed called Slammed. There's a pirate one called Choice of Broadsides. There's one called Zombie Exodus, which gets very, very difficult later on because it kind of forces you to make notes on which survivors are good at doing what and what they don't like and all kinds of things, which is personally why I've never completed it, but that's just me. And that's just naming three off the top of my head. And actually, if I will name a fourth, it would be the Heroes Rise series, which is a very, very interesting superhero setup. And I'm not going to spoil anything from that sort of franchise either. As I say, it's all text-based. There's no sound, but the writing can vary. There's also a kind of romantic-styled area to it as well, under a separate app which you can look at. But, you know, equally the writing can vary, but it is overall well put together in terms of the accessibility of it. And adventures do cost, in terms of these, like, individual adventures do cost money, and they can vary in prices. I've seen a few go up over the years, but by the same token, they can last you weeks sometimes, depending on the adventure. They can last you a very long time, even if you're putting lots and lots of hours into it. It's like having a good book, but you don't know what the ending's going to be. And even when you do know what the ending's going to be, you can work round it and get the replay value out of it that way.
And do you think that iOS games have got the same sort of immersive sort of experience as gaming on other platforms?
That is a very subjective question. Personally, I don't think iOS or, you know, mobile games in general have tapped into the full immersive power, at least not for a long time. If you go back to the Something Else games like Papa Sangre, The Nightjar, those kinds of audio-led experiences, that's where you started to see immersion happen, for me at least. You do have stuff like Evidence Number 111, which was an audio-led narrative adventure released a little while ago. That was a very good sort of police detective setup, which I rather enjoyed going through myself. But by the same token, generally the stereotype of an iOS game is very much text-based, only using voiceover with minimal to no sound design and music. But I'm always open to seeing developers try and push that envelope forward, you know, with because it's not just the writing that carries it, it's the atmosphere as well. So the sound, the music, all of that, and the engagement of the player as well. So instead of you just having to read things, getting you to choose, getting you to fight, getting you to, you know, make those decisions that can impact the story. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as things move forward, you know, as people sort of become acquainted with larger scale adventures on mainstream consoles, whether a demand increases in the mobile side of it as well, because of course we've got stuff on mobile that is far exceeding that, but it's inaccessible at the moment. But it'll be interesting to see if developers who are working specifically towards games that are more accessible, you know, it'll be interesting to see if those developers sort of catch on to those ideas as well.
And is it practical to be an iOS gamer? I'm thinking about sort of battery life on iPhone. Does it cause much of a problem? Is it something you can go about your normal sort of app usage and also to play games as well? Or do you need to sort of consider when you're charging throughout the day?
I mean, it depends on what you would consider normal app usage. For instance, I don't have, you know, wayfinding apps or things like that open a lot. I don't have Be My Eyes sort of taking up lots of my time and those kinds of things. I know other people do. But by the same token, the, you know, iOS games that I've played don't seem to take that much of a battery, at least in relatively short bursts. But if you're playing those for hours at a time, much like any app, you would be possibly forced to consider, you know, the sort of battery life that you're working with. And also an interesting point as well is, of course, you know, how much you're able to hear in, say, noisy environments and stuff. You can't easily play these games on, say, a train, for instance, if you're using bone conduction headphones, because even with those being at a reasonably loud volume, you still can't hear what's being said over the screeching and the various other sounds that are around you from, you know, the transport that you're in. But that being said, if you have an environment when you're out that you can sit down and play these games in, they are very much a portable thing that you can work with. So that it's not just a battery consideration, I think it's multi-level there, if you'll pardon the pun.
And in terms of accessibility in the App Store, is there certain, are there certain words that we should be looking out for when you're searching for games that will tell you that the accessibility is good, for example?
Unfortunately, I've not seen any efforts to standardize the App Store. I know companies in the console space are looking at that in terms of accessibility tags and things. We've had PlayStation do it. We've had Xbox do that as well, with varying degrees of success. But equally, on the App Store is most of the time, I don't even look on the App Store for apps. I normally just hear about it from other people or developers coming in and saying, hey, I've got this new app, go and have a look. I'm like, okay, I'll go and find out. So there isn't a standard at the moment that I'm aware of off the top of my head. There's no keywords that will, you know, make it work. Partly because I've seen apps that will deliberately use lots and lots of keywords to make them easier to find in general, even if they're not accessible. So say you typed in the words voiceover, for instance, you would find lots of apps to do maybe with recording or editing or things like that that are nothing to do with games. So there is an interesting quandary there of how you make that accessible. I mean, looking at things like Apple Viz might be an idea, the database of you know, accessible apps and things. That would be a place that I would usually recommend for that kind of information. Because, you know, there you've got a like-minded community who's collating all of that information there. But other than that, there is no standard. But keep an eye out on, you know, various gaming, sort of accessibility-centric gaming areas that you might frequent in order to sort of understand what new apps and things are being worked on or are releasing.
You mentioned Christmas a little bit earlier on. Can iOS games be given as a gift easily?
They can, as long as you have the Apple ID or the email address of the person you want to gift to. I personally haven't ended up gifting many games, but I have had games gifted to me, and apparently the process is quite easy, and I have gifted a few other things over the years myself. So it is fairly straightforward to do, though you may want to look into like regional restrictions and things like that as well, just to make sure that if you're gifting something to somebody in a different country, that their App Store still supports the app in question, for instance.
And outside of iOS games, SK, what are you playing at the moment?
I am still playing God of War Ragnarok because the guide still needs updating. For those of you that don't know, I have been co-writing the God of War Ragnarok guide for Gamers Without Sight alongside SLJ, who is also a fellow Gamer Without Sight, and the wonderful Mila Pavlin. who worked on God of War Ragnarok as well. And that's been quite a fun thing. We have an update hopefully planned for the end of the year. I'm not going to spoil it, but I think those of you that enjoy side quests will very much like that. That's what I'm going to say. I've also been diving back into Diablo, Diablo 4, and Sea of Thieves as well. But of course, I'm also looking forward to stuff like Rhythm Quest, which hopefully will come out next year. And in the same vein, Bits and Bops, the wonderful demo that I played a while ago on a video for my YouTube channel, still fresh in my mind because they keep being dedicated to accessibility and the idea of it as well, which is always great to see.
Well, you mentioned a few of those titles there. What else do we have to be excited about from the world of accessible gaming in 2025, do you think?
It's very hard to tell sometimes, but I think one game that I'm looking forward to is Atomfall. Even though it's already been publicly stated that menu narration and navigation assist won't be in the game, thereby facilitating the need for sighted assistance, which I know not everybody has the luxury, for lack of a better word, of. But I'm looking forward to playing that game with people. You will see me playing that on stream, I'm sure, at various points once I get things organized. But by the same token, I'm really not sure what to look forward to because, you know, not much is being announced in terms of accessibility, in terms of, you know, transparency from developers and things. And that's a real shame because that's how I look forward to games. If I know a game is going to have enough accessibility for me to play, I will look into it. I will buy, you know, higher tier editions of it, the greater the accessibility is going to be. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how Indiana Jones and the Great Circle plays out when I play that, but I'm fully aware that it may not have anywhere near enough accessibility at all for me to play it without assistance. Once again, if anything, I'm looking forward to developers hopefully understanding more so that, you know, you shouldn't be needing to rely on sighted assistance to get anywhere in a game. You shouldn't have to ask somebody to help you set the menus up. You shouldn't have to ask someone, you know, how to progress through an area. That should be a core part of a game's design. You know, if I'm not looking forward to specific games, I'm looking forward to hopefully the industry continuing to shift in the right direction on a positive track for accessibility.
And what's the best way to follow along with your streams?
Well, if you want to find me, you can do so at, well, as Sightless Combat on various social platforms. So SIGHTLESSKOMBAT. That does now include Blue Sky, if anybody is on there and is curious. And that, you know, so that's Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Blue Sky, all those other things. And also, I, of course, have a Discord server that I promote during my streams where I organize and schedule future things as well. And equally, if you wanted to run any questions by me as well, you can do so by emailing hello@sightlesscombat.com as well.
Well, just to recap on those iOS titles, we had the idle role-playing game Land of Livia, free to download and play the first chapter. There are more paid chapters available. Then Bard Card, which was the card-matching dungeon crawler, which is £3.99 to download that one. And the Choose Your Own Adventure games, Slammed, Choice of Broadsides, and Zombie Exodus, along with the Heroes Rise series. Different price points for those. Some are free to start, and you pay per chapter. Others are a flat price for the whole game. So do check on the App Store for the games that you're interested in. But for now, thank you very much to RNIB's Accessible Gaming Officer, Sightless Combat. Thanks for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me, and have a great rest of your year. Happy holidays and New Year to everybody.
It's a huge global conference focusing on inclusive design and accessibility heading to Glasgow in 2025. With more information, here's Alan Russell with RNIB's Robin Spinks.
...2025 will see an inclusive design conference coming to Glasgow. And we have with us Robin Spinks to tell us a little bit more. Robin, it's early days at the moment, but I'm sure things are coming together.
That's right, Alan. So we're really excited to be bringing together thought leaders from the fields of inclusive design and also sustainability to really ask questions and look at the roadmap for inclusive design from a sustainability perspective. We're seeing lots of companies investing in sustainability, beginning to invest more in inclusive design. And of course, at R&IB, what we want to do is create the country that actually allows people to have an equitable life and not to face unnecessary barriers because of sight loss. So we're working with industry partners to consult, to advise, to train, to make sure really that products and services, as far as we can do it, are born accessible and that new versions of products continue to improve and continue to evolve. So yeah, it's really exciting and we're looking forward to the event very much.
There have been a few of these already in Glasgow, and it seems that the list of attendees, the companies are coming along to these. You know, the companies are getting bigger and bigger. There are more companies coming along. And what's really good that I always know is the fact that it's mainstream companies that are coming along, and it's mainstream companies that want to get feedback and make their products and services accessible for blind and partially sighted people.
We want blind and partially sighted people to be able to use the same products that everyone else uses. You know, you and I want to buy the same products that everyone that we know who can see perfectly well buys. And so we should. We should be able to unbox and use and customize products. And we're seeing that happen in some quarters, but we've got a long way to go to make it a kind of ubiquitous reality. And I think, you know, the vision of this conference is that ultimately through collaborating and partnering with companies, and actually harnessing the lived experience that blind and partially sighted people have, we can bring that vision of accessible products out of the box a little bit closer. And absolutely, yeah, we're seeing Google recruited now as a sponsor. You know, they're doing some incredible work in the space of AI and machine learning and really just product development to try and bring about more equity in your pocket, more equitable experiences when you come to use products and services, and yeah, just a greater inclusion for all, really.
In the past, we've had, as you say, Google's been there in the past. We've had Apple, we've had Netflix, Samsung, Microsoft. The big players have all been there. And they do seem to be keen to make that change. And, you know, all importantly as well, when things develop and things grow, is to maintain that accessibility as well. And for me, as someone who is blind and uses tech, it's about having products that everyone else has. It's about not having things that look different to others too.
Absolutely. You know, we want to have the same products and services as everyone else. We don't want to be singled out or labeled. And actually, I think the vision of the conference is that by collaborating and partnering, we can create great things that work for people. You know, a really nice example of that, since the last time we did this conference, we did some work with Google. And in fact, we helped them to launch their Accessibility Discovery Center in London. And post that launch, we asked them to create an experience for low vision people that would be integrated into the Pixel smartphone. And fast forward about 9 months, we actually went from request and securing of resources through co-design right up to launching the product, which we launched on the Play Store. And we've got, you know, a free to use product that people who are low vision can use to have much better access to hard copy content like price labels, physical menus, signs, display boards, etc. So there's one little example of where, you know, the conference just stimulates those conversations, the partnerships have enriched, and ultimately it becomes possible to influence and to bring about positive change that affects lots and lots of people. And free, you know, we're keen to create tools that actually don't have a price tag. They have the best price tag of all, they're free, and actually they're embedded into the experience. So when you download that Pixel Magnifier app, what happens is it goes into your settings, and when you open the settings menu, you can see that you have that app there, and you've got an opportunity to then toggle it on and off with a shortcut. So lots of examples of that, and we're really looking forward to many more examples of collaboration across hardware, software, services.
It is early days at the moment. What can people expect on the day, and do you have any idea of who will be attending?
Yeah, we're really excited. We've got the ambassador for Antigua and Barbuda, Ambassador Aubrey Webson, who will be keynoting. So that's fantastic. We've also got Dr. Caroline Casey, founder of the Valuable 500 there. Really interesting session on transportation and mobility. And that'll be Christopher Patno from Google and also Ben Lowenstein from Waymo. The people may have heard of Waymo is a self-driving car company that's owned by Google. And they'll be talking about the legislation that's obviously gone through Parliament in terms of autonomous vehicles for the UK, but also what the landscape looks like. Because I think, you know, autonomous vehicles, that's one area where we've all been sort of like sold this notion, this dream of autonomous vehicles becoming a reality. And I've been lucky enough to sample that myself and have that experience of driving autonomously. It will be a reality in the not too distant future for people here in the UK and for blind and partially sighted people as well. So looking forward to learning more about that and what the plans are for rollout and development. And yeah, a whole host of sessions on things like AI and robotics and machine learning, but, you know, a strong focus throughout the whole thing on what does this actually mean? So what does it mean in terms of what's possible, what could be possible, and more importantly, how could we get there by partnering and collaborating? So yeah, very exciting schedule. I think in terms of transportation, we've so far got light rail, aviation, ferries, road transport. We're trying to take a really holistic view of, you know, what people think about today, but also what they're looking forward to tomorrow.
We are going to catch up with you a few times, I think, ahead of the event anyway, Robin, and we'll update people on what's going to be happening. But where and when will this be taking place?
This is taking place on the 17th and 18th of March 2025 at the Glasgow Science Centre. And there's a web page that you can go to learn a little bit more about it by going to rnib.org.uk/inclusive design.
Really looking forward to it, Robin. As you say, we will be catching up with you to bring people more as we get closer to the event itself. But for the moment, thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Pleasure. Thank you, Alan. Great to speak to you.
That's it from us here at Tech Talk this time. Thank you as ever for your company. Do get in touch. If you have a comment, a question, a suggestion, or even a tech tip that you'd like to share, the email address, as always, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown, and Hubert Pavarkovich, until next time, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.